Now, this is our final weekend in our Momentum series that we began at the beginning of the year, where we've been talking about how to move forward in life and moving forward in the things that matter most in faith and faithfulness and what it is that God has called us to. And as we end this series, I just want to make it clear that there is a calling that God has for your life, for our lives. And I've been thinking about what could be more important than knowing God, knowing the one, the creator, the one who made us, you know, and at the same time, knowing what he has called us to in life. And I've been thinking about Jeremiah. I often dip into Jeremiah, but Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5, that says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." And there are some things in this verse that are unique to Jeremiah, but there are also some things in this verse that are universal to us all. And what is universal is that God knew you, knew us when we were in the womb, that he fashioned us, that he formed us, that he made us, okay, that he knit you together with intention and with purpose and with a calling on your life. And here's what I want you to know, is, you know, you haven't missed it. You know, in God's redemptive ways, in his grace for us, God knew that you would be, that I would be where I am, where you are right now. You know, he would know that there are things that we have struggled with, that we struggle with. And he knew that when he made us and he formed us. And God is a redemptive God, and we can always get in on his calling in our lives. We're always on plan A, as it were. God doesn't have a plan B for us. He just reworks plan A for us. So you haven't missed God's calling for your life. And God's invitation to us, to you, is that we would join him. And you may not be called to be a prophet to the nations, okay? But you are called, I'm called, you are called to be a light to your neighborhood. It may not be to start a global movement, but it might be to start a weekly Bible study. Or it may not be to reach millions of people, but it might be to reach your family and maybe break off sort of a generational cycle. You may not be called to be a CEO, but you may be called to reach the CEO of the company that you work for, you know, to be a witness to the gospel, to pray for your boss, you know, to lead your boss to Christ. You know, you have a calling, whether it's to be a good mum or a good dad, or a godly husband, or a godly wife, or to be a teacher, or an author, or an artist, or an entrepreneur, or a coach, or a songwriter, or a leader at work, you know. And here's the thing, listen, we mustn't compare our callings. You know, God knew what he was doing when he fashioned you. He made you, gave you a calling. So I want to encourage you to embrace that calling. And so today we're going to talk about how we can be faithful in the thing that God has called us to in pursuing that calling. Now, your calling can change, but your purpose does not. You know, our purpose ultimately is to know Christ and to make Christ known. You know, whatever our calling is, whatever our platform is, you know, wherever God has placed us and called us to, our purpose is the same. It's to know Christ and to make Christ known. But our calling is different. If you want to know your calling, then you have to seek the caller. You know, if you want to know why you were made, seek the one who made you. And the more you draw near to God, the more he reveals who you are, you know, and how you were made and what he's made you for. Jeremiah, it says in Jeremiah, "I formed you, I made you, and I set you apart." You know, God has not set you aside, he set you apart. He set you apart for his calling and his purpose in your life. And your purpose primarily is to know him. And whatever your calling is, I can promise you that if you've been called by God, your calling is for others. It's not just to stash more money in the bank. It's not just to make a name for yourself, okay? It is to make a difference for the sake of others. I got a picture of this, really. I was reminded of this last year, actually, as a dear friend of ours was diagnosed with cancer, that they needed surgery, they needed time to heal, and they have healed. It's a remarkable story of God's grace. But what I noticed in that journey that they were on was how there were a community of others who had been on that journey before, who reached out with advice, who shared little bits of information about what was going to happen, about what to expect, about, you know, how to navigate the implications of surgery and the best and the most comfortable chairs to sit in as this individual recuperated, the best cushions to use, the best way to sleep at night. And people further down the road were bringing encouragement and hope and help. And it really struck me that that was an amazing picture of discipleship. Discipleship, what is discipleship? Discipleship is somebody who's just a little bit further down the road of faith than somebody else and saying, let me help you, let me encourage you, you know, along the way. You don't have to have a Bible degree, you know, in theology to be for others. You just need to be a little bit further down the road than somebody else and encourage them along the way. You know, God has given you faith, not so that you can store it up or that you can show it off, okay, but so that you can share it, give it away to other people, saying, you know, hey, if you've lost faith, if you're struggling, you know, you can have some of mine. Let me encourage you. You know, if God has given you faith, if God has given you momentum in life, it's not so that you can move faster for you, it's so that you can bring others with you. I was thinking, I've been thinking and praying about momentum this past week, and as I had this picture of a Ducati motorbike, and if I were a biker, then I think, you know, a Ducati would be one of those bikes that I would love to have, you know. And when we think about momentum, you know, we think about momentum like that, don't we? A strong, powerful sort of motorbike. But do you know what else has momentum? A school bus. You know, as I was preparing this, you know, a school bus went past my study window, okay, dropping people off at the local school, you know, and I felt like the Lord really speaking to me about this. You know, you weren't built to be a Ducati motorbike in faith, okay, where it's all about you, where it's all about yourself, you know, and you know, going down the road of faith. You know, when I get to heaven, I want to show up with a school bus, saying that, here are the people that I'm bringing with me. You know, these are the ones that are coming along together. You see, it's not an individualistic journey where it's all about you, okay? You know, God has given us faith so that we can share it with others and bring them with us. Momentum is not for you. It is for others. And we actually see this in Jesus' life. You know, Jesus lived his life full of faith, you know, in communion with the Father, trusting him all the time, trusting him so much that it took him to the place where he laid down his life on the cross, and trusting that the Father would raise him up again on the third day. You know, why did Jesus go to the cross? He went for the Father's glory, and he went for us. He went for others. You know, and in Christ we see the ultimate expression of a life lived for others. You know, in the Old Testament, we see it in the life of Moses, actually. You know, in the New Testament, we have the gospel revealed. In the Old Testament, we have the gospel concealed. You know, and in Moses' life, we see a picture of what it looks like to have a life of momentum for others. And so in this series so far, as we wrap it up, okay, you know, if you want to get momentum in life, then you've got to understand Moses. You've got to get a little mo, as it were, in your life. And today we're going back to Hebrews 11 again, which gives us this overview of Moses' life. You know, and if you want to dive deep into the life of Moses and get into Exodus, okay. But here in Hebrews 11, we just have this summary of Moses' life. And I just want to read through it again. And then I'm going to give you three things that we need to get, okay, if we want to be faithful, if you want to be faithful in your calling. So Hebrews 11 at verse 23. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born, because they saw that he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt, because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who was invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. So let me give us my final recap of the journey that we've been on so far, and then I want to talk about faithfulness in the journey. Okay, we've been using the analogy of an arrow and how, in order for an arrow to sort of fulfill its purpose, to fulfill its sort of calling, to reach the destination for which it was designed, then there has to be the pullback. There has to be the drawback, as it were. And we've talked about how Moses was drawn back, pulled back, okay, drawn away from his family, from his home, from his friends, from relationship, from culture. And he was adopted and raised in Pharaoh's household. And in that drawback, he had the best education. He had the best training, okay? He had the best, the most extraordinary leadership development. So there was this, he lived with this tension in his life. And the tension that we see in the drawbacks, in the setbacks, in the challenges that we have in life, as we're drawn back, they enable us to be sent out. And so God was drawing Moses back to prepare him for what he'd prepared for him. And here's the thing, the appropriate response to the drawback is to surrender to the process. Now the second movement in this whole process is, in the momentum, is you draw back, and it is the pulls, the weight, as it were. So in Moses' life, in the first 40 years, you get the drawback, and the next 40 years is the pulls. You know, it's the waiting. And we talked about at the school of the desert, we talked about Midian, we talked about the wilderness where Moses was tending sheep for his father-in-law in the wilderness. And I don't know about you, but I wonder whether you've ever thought, I was made for more than this. That's Moses. And God uses the wilderness. He uses the desert and the years there to refine our faith. It's in the season of monotony and obscurity that God will use the solitude of the desert to teach us his ways, to teach us his words, and to detox us from Egypt. Because before Moses could get the people out of Egypt, God had to get Egypt out of Moses. And it took 40 years for God to do that. And we need to know that if we're in the pause, if we're in the waiting right now, you know, God has not set you aside, he's set you apart. And the appropriate response to the pause is to listen. It's to listen. So to surrender and to listen. And then the third part of this movement is, you know, we've got the drawback, we've got the pause, we've got the tension. The third part is ready, aim, fire. Ready, aim, fire, okay. So for Moses, there was a burning bush. And it was through the fire in that moment, okay, that Moses had an invitation, a calling from God to join him. And there will be moments when God invites us, when God calls us, okay, to join him in his assignment, in his calling. You know, often in an opportunity that feels way bigger than you. And the appropriate response in that moment is what I called last week, a barefooted yes. God, I surrender, I give myself to you. The answer is yes, okay? And of course, how do we prepare for that? Well, the best way to prepare for a big yes is 1,000 little yeses every single day. Every time you say yes to a little yes, you're preparing for the big yes that is coming. You know, how are we doing with the opportunities that we have now, okay? In the moments that nobody else sees, where we are choosing Christ and where we're dying to self, you know, that's where we're building the muscle of faith again, so that God can trust us with later opportunities. And then after saying yes, then there's the assignment. It's the thing that God has called us to. And again, I've been thinking about how God called us to this place, to ministry here at Encounter Vineyard, okay? You know, so over 7 years ago now that God called Carrie and I to be lead pastors here, okay? And as I said last week, we were not expecting that, okay? You know, we were just going to say yes to whatever it was that God called us to, whatever God asked us to do. But as we felt that whisper, as it were, okay? And God at work through circumstances and through conversations, okay? You know, sensing the Lord saying, I want you to come and pastor here at Encounter. I found myself saying, because of my particular circumstances, Lord, I don't know whether I have what it takes. I really don't know. And I wonder whether you've ever felt underqualified for something, you know, like I don't know that I have what it takes, okay, but God, if you think I have what it takes, then come and get me, was my sort of posture in the end, okay. And we reached the point when we knew that God was moving, that God was shifting us, as it were, and that not only us, but the church sensed that God was moving as well. And let me just say this again, not every decision in my life has been like that. Very few decisions in my life have been like that, actually. But in that moment, I just needed to know that it was God, and that what was happening wasn't being orchestrated by the flesh, as it were, by humanity, but that coming here was a calling from God. I wonder, have you ever felt unqualified? It's where Moses is at this moment. He feels unqualified, but God has called him. And then God says to him, I want you to go toe-to-toe with Pharaoh. And Pharaoh was the most powerful human being, you know, in the world at that time, okay? You know, and Moses, I want you to tell him to set his entire slave force free, you know, to tell him that the Lord God of Israel has said, let my people go, okay? And so Moses builds up the courage and he goes to Pharaoh and he says, release the Hebrews, release the Israelites. And Pharaoh says, who says? And Moses says, Yahweh. And Pharaoh goes, no. And so God begins to move. And, Egypt had 80-odd sort of gods and goddesses, and Pharaoh was considered one of them. But through this series of 10 plagues, God reveals their power, the powerlessness of their gods and idols. And Pharaoh continued to resist setting the people free until ultimately the Passover, as is referred to in this passage in verse 28, which was God's final judgment on Egypt. And basically God tells Moses, I want you to tell every Hebrew family to kill a lamb, to take the blood of the lamb and put that blood on the doorposts of their homes. And I imagine, as the families were doing this, putting the blood on their doorposts, okay, that they were probably thinking, well, why are we doing this? This seems crazy, you know, what on earth is going on? They may have been, they may have been cynical, that they may have been skeptical, but it took faith for them to do that. And it says, by faith, they put blood over the door. And the purpose of that wouldn't be revealed, really, until 1,500 years later. It's what we celebrate when we share communion together. Finally, Pharaoh relents. He sets the people free. You know, can you imagine? It's dark. The sun's beginning to come up. That there are 2,000 plus families that were slaves the day before who are now marching out into the wilderness. And Moses is leading them to freedom. And can you imagine them thinking, this is it? You know, we're free people. And they enter into the wilderness going, God has rescued us. God has saved us. And in this passage in Hebrews, it talks about the Red Sea and the walls of Jericho. And these are like bookends for the 40 years in the wilderness, basically. The Passover is at the heart of the Exodus, but we have these other stories that are like bookends, okay, of the journey in between. And Moses led them in this assignment that God had given to him. And as he did that, there were things that he needed. And I want to highlight now the three things that Moses had for faith and faithfulness that we need in our calling whenever God has called us, okay? It says this. He led them by a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. So every day, whether it was every 24 hours, whether it was day or night, God was leading them. And we need to know whatever our calling is, whatever our assignment is, okay? You know, and you might be called to be the leader, okay? But God is the one who is leading. You know, wouldn't it be amazing if we wake up tomorrow morning and there was a pillar of cloud in the morning, okay? You know, and it's like, you know, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do today? Should I marry her? Should I marry him? Yes or no? Just follow the cloud, okay? You know, where should we go and eat dinner? You know, where should we move? You know, should I take that job? Just follow the cloud, as it were. You know, if there was a pillar of cloud or fire, that would be incredible. Actually, that's what the disciples had. When they woke up, it's like, Jesus, where are we going today? And it's actually what we have as followers of Jesus, because his presence, his spirit lives in us. It's like, you know, God is saying, I want you to walk that closely with me, where you have intimacy with me, where you let me lead your life and to guide you. Yeah, and they were back then, they were a nomadic people. They were on the move. So he could lead them by day and he could lead them by night. Thing is, can God lead you by night? You know, can he lead you in the daytime? Are we leadable? You see, the cloud protected them from the blazing sun in the day, and the fire protected them from the coldness of the desert at night. You see, God in his loving kindness leads us, wants to lead us, and he leads us by his presence. He leads us by his spirit. And look where he leads them. It says in Exodus 13, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said if they faced war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around the desert towards the Red Sea. This verse tells us that God led them the long way. They were taking the long way home, as it were. Don't you hate it when he does that? It's like, you know, it's like when you're driving the car, you've got a family in the car, and somebody at the back of the car says, are we there yet, sort of thing, okay? Can you imagine? I mean, it's bad enough with a small family in the back. Can you imagine 2 million people? God is leading them on the long way. They're going, are we there yet? You know, why would he lead them on the long way, okay? Because he knew that there were battles. If they went the other way, there were battles that they weren't yet ready for. And sometimes God takes us the long way in life because he's building faith. And he's protecting us from the battles that we're not ready to face, you know, because we might want to return back to Egypt. You know, it's out of God's loving kindness that he leads us, out of his protection that he gave them this delay here. And the Spirit leads them, the presence of God, and leads them into a predicament that we find in Exodus chapter 14. You know, that they've got the Red Sea in front of them, and Pharaoh, of course, has changed his mind, you know, because of the economy, because he's losing his workforce, as it were. And so Pharaoh is coming after the Hebrew people, and he's coming to enslave them again. And in this moment, they're stuck between the Red Sea, you know, between an ocean, as it were, in front of them, and the armies behind them. And so they cried out to the Lord. Why did they cry out to the Lord? Because they're stuck, because they're afraid, okay? They think, this is it. We're going to die. It's all over for us, okay? And they say to Moses, you should have left us in Egypt. We were better off in Egypt when we were slaves, okay? We don't want to die here in the wilderness, okay? And in that moment, as Moses is hearing their voices, what does he do? Guess what he doesn't do? He doesn't take a poll and see what everyone's thinking and ask them, what do you think we should do? He doesn't start counting the enemy and their number of horses and their number of chariots and their number of spears, okay? Well, what does he do? He directs their attention to the Lord. This is what he does in Exodus 14. Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord made walls of water, okay? He made a pathway, he made a road through the sea, and the Hebrews passed through, and as the Egyptians were following, okay, the seas overcame them, and God delivered his people. He set them free and set them on their way to the promised land. Listen, when God's call is bigger than you, And his call on your life is to make disciples, okay? And his call on your life is to know him, to help other people know him, okay? When his calling on your life is bigger than you, there will be times when it seems that there is no way through this. And God at times will engineer circumstances so that only he can get the glory. You know, he will engineer circumstances in our life so that we have to look to him. And so if you're leading other people, before you lead anybody else, okay, you've got to lead yourself to stand firm. Stand firm. What do I mean by that? You've got to dig in. And in our world, there is such a temptation to listen to negative voices that call us back into Egypt, as it were, that to start studying the enemy. Moses said, stand firm. The Lord will fight for you. And I was sort of thinking about Psalm 121, verse 3, which says, he will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. We can sleep at night because God doesn't. He will not let your foot slip. But before he led them, Moses had to get his footing on the promises of God and direct their attention to him. How did he do this? Where did that come from? It was 40 years in the wilderness. It was in the solitude that Moses' faith was built for this moment. And if he wanted to have momentum and to lead other people, he had to go back to what God had embedded in him in those 40 years. If we want faith and faithfulness in our calling, we've got to get our footing. But then we have to organize our lives in such a way where we, secondly, get a tent. Where you can have solitude in your life. And it's actually quite easy to have solitude when you're leading 200 sheep, actually. I think it's a bit harder when you have 2 million people that you're looking after. So look at what Moses did in Exodus 33. We read this. Now, Moses used to take a tent, pitch it outside the camp, some distance away, calling it the tent of meeting. He had this place, he had this tent where he would go to meet with God, where he would talk with God, where he'd commune with God, where he'd listen to the voice of God. And Moses would go there and he'd take his fears and his anxieties and his questions and his concerns to God. You know, when our children were small, it's more like to be our grandchildren now. You know, I used to love, one of my favorite things was to make a pretend tent with them, okay, maybe in the family room or something like that. And you'd get blankets, you'd get pillows or cushions, and you sort of make a tent, and it would just be you and them in this tent, okay? And what was great about that was it would eliminate all the other distractions, as it were. And I could focus on them, and they could focus on me, and we could talk, and we could listen. And that's what Moses did with God. He eliminated all the other distractions so he could focus on the face of God. I wonder whether you know about prayer shawls, okay? You know, the Jewish people did, they still do actually, use prayer shawls. You know, what they would do is they'd get cloths and they'd put them over their heads, and that they'd be like tents, okay? They'd get in their tent. You know, even to this day, if you go to Israel, you know, you can see people in their prayer shawls, you know. And the Hebrew word for this prayer shawl is talith, which means a little tent. And when Moses would go to his tent to meet with God, they would go into their tent under their prayer shawls. So let me just ask you this question. Do you have a tent? Do you have a place where you can be alone with God? It doesn't have to be in the cellar, the basement of your house. It doesn't have to be up in the loft, okay, you know, or out in the garden. But you need to have a place, somewhere where you can go, where you can, it needs to be like a secret place where you can encounter him and you can hear from him and you can commune with him. And I'm telling you that the more responsibility God has given you in your life, the more voices you need to attend to. You need to make sure that you've carved out time to hear from him. That's how we live by faith. We have his presence with us all the time. But the more intentional we are with our time, the more we are aware of his presence all the time. And finally, it's about getting a team. if you can. In Exodus 18, Jethro's father-in-law, Moses' father-in-law, visits Moses, and he sees him working, all through the day, just very, very long days. And I mean, can you imagine sort of handling all those cases, trying to settle all those disputes? And Jethro basically says to him, it's not good what you're doing. The way you're doing this is not working. Okay? It's too heavy for you. You cannot handle all this alone. So he tells him to get others around him. He tells him to get a team. And he says, get some trustworthy people. People who have your heart. People who have your back, okay? People who love God. People who fear God. People who can handle some of this for you. And the truth is that some of us, we have callings on our lives. And what we're doing is good, but perhaps how we're doing it is not as good as it could be. Because we're being individualistic, because we're doing it on our own. And if your calling is bigger than you, it means that there is space for other people to join you in what it is that you're doing. And of course, what does that take? It takes humility to ask other people for help. I was really touched again as I was just reading through Exodus one more time. And in Exodus 33, we're talking about the tent of meeting. And it says this, the Lord will speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. Then Moses would return to the camp, but his young aide, Joshua, son of Nun, did not leave the tent. The picture here is of Joshua lingering in the tent. You know, Joshua has been close to Moses meeting with God. But then for himself, he wanted the presence of God so much that he wouldn't leave the tent of meeting. And I was thinking about what I want to call the lingering principle here. You know, and if you show me where you linger, I'll show you what you love, wherever that could be. Where you linger reveals what we love. And I really believe, and I've sensed this for some time now, that God, in and through the life of Encounter Vineyard, is that God is raising us up, calling us to be like a Joshua people. Those who linger in the presence of God. Those who want God's presence more than anything else. Those who are willing to wait to linger in his presence. So when God chose a successor to Moses, he didn't choose someone who loved power or authority or position. He chose somebody who loved the presence. God is looking for people who love the presence. Where he says, I can trust you because what you want most of all is more of me. I think when we get to heaven, when I get to heaven, we get to talk to Moses, because I suspect we will. I want to ask him, what was the best thing? What was the best thing you did in those 40 years in the wilderness? What was the thing that you felt you accomplished the most? You know, what is it that you are most proud of? And I think he would say, Joshua. And you know that Joshua, that Jesus is the Greek name for Joshua, Yeshua. And it actually means the one who saves. Joshua was the one who led them into the promised land. Jesus is the one who leads us into our promised land. Jesus is our true and better Moses. Jesus is the true and better Joshua. He's the ultimate expression of faith and faithfulness. He is in perfect communion with the Father. You know, he is the one in whose tent we abide in. He is the dwelling place. He is the place where heaven and earth meet. And he says, if you abide in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Jesus invites us to live in him. And we can have God's presence all of the time because of Christ. And so Jesus let his foot slip on the cross so that ours wouldn't, so that we could enter into our promised land. So let's pray, shall we? Lord, thank you. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for your favor. Thank you for your presence through your Spirit. I pray that we could sort of discern and embrace the calling that you place over our lives, whether big or small, to trust your purposes for them. pray for any who feel stuck in that pause, in that period of waiting, in a long season of waiting, Lord, that you would strengthen them, strengthen us in our faith. Give us patience, give us the ability to trust you in your perfect timing and guidance. I pray for all of us that we would cultivate a deeper intimacy in our walk with you. As we go into whatever lies ahead of us in this coming week, Lord, I pray that you'd bless us, that you'd watch over us, that you'd make your face to shine upon us, that you'd give us your peace and your grace and your blessing. Blessing of God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit be upon each and every one of us, both today and forevermore. Amen.